Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Suffering does not exist in the natural world. That is, the world where things find their place without preconception. The world where everything is in balance and in harmony. And when we live in the natural world, we don't feel that anything is special. Nothing is special in the natural world. But when we are not in the natural world, everything can feel confusing. That is the world. When we are not in the natural world, we are continually trying to decide what is the most special thing. And what things are special and what things are not special. And our mind is always concerned about such speculation. Nowadays, in modern times, it is not easy to feel the natural world. The world of today is crowded, it is speedy, and we emphasize excitement. There are many conflicting ideas about what is right and what is wrong. And there are many ideas about what is good for us. What is good for us individually? What is good for us collectively? And these days, in the modern world, people are very, very fond of ideas. And that when that happens, we very easily lose sight of the natural world because we will insist on collecting ideas, we will insist on creating new things, and we will insist on creating what we call a better world. But our practice can teach us. What we can learn from our practice is that if we do not feel the natural world, we will not be able to create a so-called better world. Suzuki Roshi talked about monastic life and how the day-to-day activities of the monks in the monastery were very natural. They emphasized in the midst of all their activities, there was nothing special. And he tells a story about how some tourists, when he was a young monk, some tourists came to the monastery to see what they felt was a very unusual place. And they took many photos of this unusual place. But he said it was the monks who felt that the tourists were unusual, because the monks were just doing their natural daily routine. So to be in the natural world is to do what we should do in this moment. So there is a very famous saying that says, when you are tired, you sleep. When you are hungry, you eat. And that does not mean we should be lazy and lead a very inactive life. It doesn't mean we should not build a temple or work in the garden or have a job and have a family or express our creative nature. What is meant by this saying, when tired, sleep, when hungry, eat? It means pay attention all the time to what's happening in the moment and forget all about ideas of an individual self. Dogen, who is the founder of Zen in Japan, has a very famous expression. To study Buddhism is to study the self. And to study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self means to let go of ideas about who we are. Ideas about ourselves are created in the mind. When we can let go and not cling to ideas about ourselves, we can recognize ourselves in the natural world. The natural world has no intention. The creative self does have some intention. And our life consists of both the natural self and the creative self. When we are in the process of creating, we are always changing, finding something new, and feeling some excitement. When we are in the natural world, we don't worry about excitement and we don't worry about newness. All of us can find excitement. We can find satisfaction in the excitement of creating something. And we can also find joy in feeling our true self in the natural world. Without feeling the joy of our natural self, the excitement of the creative self will create problems. This is an important point that we have to understand in the modern world, which emphasizes creativity and the excitement that comes from it. But if we are to live in harmony with our own life, we also have to find joy in feeling our true self in the natural world. There is always the danger that we will become attached to the excitement of our creativity. We can become very attached to our creative skills. And when we are too attached to our own creativity, we will find difficulties in our life. Well, because we are human beings, we have to encourage creativity as a way to make life better and safer. But at the same time, we need to encourage our practice, our selfless practice, so that we can express our natural self and remember who we are inherently. When we can remember who we are before there is preconception, we can understand the true meaning of our activities in the everyday world. And there will be no danger of getting caught up in that activity. We will be free of the difficulties that accompany our continuous consideration of this is good and this is bad, or maybe this is better. Oh, that's not so bad. Oh, this is worse than I thought. The mind goes round and round when we are caught up in that kind of thinking. The thinking that comes in the everyday world. So our practice encourages us and shows us a way to be in the natural world while we are in the everyday world. The point of our practice is not to perfect ourselves in our everyday life. The point of our practice is to understand our natural self. And when we do understand our natural self, we will know that we are already perfect. Zazen is the expression of our perfect nature. If when someone gives you a cup of tea, you may find it hot or cold. You may find it bitter or sweet. But you cannot describe this taste to others. You can say some words like hot or sweet. But these words do not explain the feeling that you have when you actually drink the tea. So we just simply appreciate our awareness of the nature of the taste of tea. And this appreciation is the awareness of our natural self. In Zen practice, drinking tea is an important activity. It's part of the culture that Buddhism and Zen came from. So we should know how to drink tea, just as we should know how to hear the sound of a bird or the sound of music. Or how to relieve ourselves, or how to pass our friend the non-fat milk, or how to discover and create something new. Without practice, sometimes these things can be difficult. They escape us. That happens when our mind does not feel the natural world. So, quite often when we have tea, we don't even taste it. And we don't taste how we pass the non-fat milk. Instead, our mind is grasping for something new, something to be excited about. So if a Zen master says, be attentive when you pass the non-fat milk. Some people might say, what's the big deal about that? But if we pay careful attention, we discover that tasting our tea and passing the non-fat milk is the same thing as creating something new. Buddhist history tells us that it was Bodhidharma who established Zen in Japan. And Bodhidharma is often quoted for the things that he said. And one thing that he said was, even if a Buddha should suddenly appear, there is no need for reverence. The natural mind is empty and contains no such forms. Those who hold on to such appearances will go to hell. And another way to understand the first line, when he said, if a Buddha should appear, there is no need for reverence. Another way to understand that is, if a Buddha should suddenly appear, there is no need for excitement. So we practice to let go of excitement. And whatever appears, we accept and understand it, whether it's a Buddha or a bird or a garbage pail. Our practice is to simply pay attention to everything that comes to us. When we pay attention, we will know what to do with each activity. Then we will feel natural. There will be no suffering and no problem. That concludes what I wanted to say tonight. And does anybody have a comment about what I said, or any, or a question, or anything they would like to add? Hi, Brenda.
Unless
Hey.
I think someone else also had a question, but I'll go then. I was wondering, in the course of life, there is still suffering, like it or not. And how do you suggest going or approaching it from the natural perspective?
Many years ago, when I was first starting this practice, when I was thoroughly confused by it and what it meant and what it was suggesting we do, I went and spoke to my teacher. And I said, there are so many things that I need, and so many things that I want, and so many things that I have to do. I don't know how I will be able to do it all. And he simply said, you already have everything. And my mind immediately thought, no, look at this list of things that I don't have. And that's the way my mind was when I first started. Fill up your life with all the things of the world. Collect, collect, seek. And what he told me was quite simple and quite profound. It was the essence of practice. We already have everything if we allow ourselves to be in the natural world. We have no more and no less than the birds, than the trees, than the ocean. We share all these things with everything. But when we separate ourselves from the natural world because of our acquisitive mind, our greedy mind, we don't feel content. We feel discontent. We feel we need to collect things of the everyday world to make our lives complete. So in our practice, we come to understand that we already have everything. There is nothing in addition to strive for. This, I think, is the natural world. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a hand up from Sandra.
Oh, Sandra.
Actually, the question is from Sandra's husband.
He's asking it for us. Go ahead.
You speak of the creative self and the natural self. We have been reading Everyday Zen by Charlotte Joko Beck, and much of what she as of what we have read so far has to do with sort of the elimination or the transcendence of the self. And I, in any case, have been trying to grasp what the self might be. Conscious, some form of consciousness, anyway, could you say more about the natural self, please? Is there a self in the you call it the natural world? In other writings, I think it's been called like the I'm not sure if you're talking about what is it Thich Nhat Hanh calls the ultimate dimension as opposed to the historical dimension. Anyway, please talk more about the natural self.
When we experience our natural self, we feel endless. There are no dimensions, and everything is limitless. And we no longer feel separate from all the other phenomenon of the everyday world. In the natural world, when we are in the presence of trees, we are communicating with those trees. When we are in the presence of some stones, we are communicating. Not in the everyday world of communicating with words and with ears, but communicating at the fundamental level. Here's a short anecdote that I've mentioned in the past about President Harry Truman after he retired. And he retired to his home in Missouri, and he lived a very simple life. And he was assigned, federal agents to accompany him. All retired presidents have people who are with them to take care of them and protect them. And so one day, he and a couple of these agents were out walking, and they came across a very big oak tree. And Harry Truman said to the tree, "You are doing a good job." And I'm always touched by the simplicity and the wisdom of those words and that act. He actually spoke to the tree and he said, "You're doing a good job." And we don't know what the tree said in return. I know that Harry Truman was not a Buddhist. I know that. We all know that. But yet, that little story tells me that he had some spark of Buddhist understanding within him. You are doing a good job. And when we acknowledge that understanding with every phenomenal thing in the world, we will feel no separation and there will be no suffering. And if we can find some way to express that in actual words to the people we are with, it'll show that we do understand our practice. We should find a way to say that in some form, even to people who are having a difficult time. Good job. Good job. There's where we find our reverence and our appreciation for the natural world. And you mentioned transcendence. You know, when we can do that, express to people that we feel they're doing a good job, we've transcended the ordinary self. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you know that you're in the dark?
Let's see.
I have a lamp there.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Yay.
Yeah, that's better.
yeah, it's good. Hi.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh, Philip. Phil?
I'm sorry. I don't feel like asking a question, but I felt like your talk ended in a beautiful place. For me, without ambivalence, my feeling ambivalence. But then when Harry Truman's name came up, I was reminded of Brenda's question and have felt, I know August, I think it's August 8th is the anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing. And even though I think in my heart, I feel satisfied with, happy with what you said. I wonder if you could say something about, maybe we all try to do a good job, but sometimes there are things that we feel maybe we could have done a different way. And do you see a way of embracing those feelings in along with this, I guess, basic trust, faith in our natural self, a natural world where we can experience our lives in the, I don't know if serene is the right word, but in the deeply calm way that you speak of, but still acknowledge things that we could have done maybe differently.
Okay. Yeah. You know, Buddha said that sickness is suffering, old age is suffering, not to get what one wants is suffering, death is suffering. And there's something that he left out, something that we could add, and that is to regret is suffering. So when we make a mistake and recognize it, when we say something or do an activity that we later realize we could have done it a little bit differently and it would have been more, might be kinder or more effective or something, it does no good to regret what we did in the past, to hang on to that regret and to criticize ourselves. That's what a regret is. We are criticizing ourselves for not being perfect in the past. So when we realize we could have done something better, we simply make a vow and to ourselves and say, next time I'll pay a little bit more attention and maybe it'll be a little better. Instead of getting hung up in the regret, let's concern ourselves with how we might be creative in the coming moments. I think in the modern world, holding on to regret is a big source of suffering for many people. We need to learn to let go of that and do something more creative. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if there are no other questions or comments, why don't we take a moment to introduce ourselves?
We do have one more question here, Les.
Okay. Oh, Travis?
Hi, Les. Thank you for your talk. My question was based on your comment about the natural world and to make a better world that we need to be in touch with the natural world. I think that's close to what you said. My question is, with people today in the creative world who are specializing more and more, how do you see that relationship to that connection to the natural world? Is it a process or a knowing or a cycling, or even a type of progress in and of itself? That's my question. Thank you.
when we think of progress, we think of the world of technology and the new things that we can invent and put to use that help our lives. But there's another kind of progress, which has to do with our growing sense of our natural world. After you have been practicing for a while, you may come to the understanding or the realization or the feeling that, oh, I've changed. I'm not the same person I was when I first came here. Something has changed. You can't exactly define it or explain it, but you feel more natural. And the recognition that we have that our naturalness is now flowing much more readily than it did years ago is a progress of a different kind. Of course, we have to be careful not to seek that kind of progress, not to seek anything like that. But one day that may happen. Oh, or somebody may, some person who you know very well, a close family member or a friend, will say, you know what? You've changed. And it'll help you realize that your practice, what's the term? I think ripen. We are ripening, you know, constantly ripening like a banana. When we have that kind of feeling, and we are convinced that it is a sincere feeling and we're not making it up, it is a great source of satisfaction. So for us who are trying to be Zen students and Buddhists and be productive in the everyday world, there's more than one kind of progress. Thank you, Travis. Oh, Teresa, hello.
Hi, Les. How are you?
Okay.
Thank you for your talk. I'm sitting here thinking that there is no way to be happy if you don't have this practice. And I'm thinking that very few people have access to practice in the world. Even, you know, there are not many centers. You said that you started the practice many years ago. So after all these years of practice, what's your idea of moving the practice forward?
I think I've come to understand that it's a mistake to feel that we ourselves personally can move the practice forward. We can build temples and we can build communities. But we have to allow the practice to express itself through us. Not that we are implementing the practice, that we are giving it a gift to other people. You know, we were so lucky that our founder was Suzuki Roshi. He was very special in that he did not try to be special. He didn't say too much. He gave many talks, but he didn't say too much in person. But his words and his gestures were so natural. That they were gifts in themselves. the practice was moved forward by his own life. And not that he made a special effort to move it forward. He made a special effort to establish it in this country so that people could have the opportunity to discover it and practice. So he established San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara so that all of his students, through their own effort, could find a way to have their practice express itself in their life.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.